Hi, this is Kirk Lapointe, managing editor of the Vancouver Sun, former editor-in-chief of the Hamilton Spectator, and therefore an honorary Hamiltonian. Please join us as we help CFMU continue to redefine radio in our community.
The difference for men and for women, chronic stress, comes from different causes for the men and the women.
Yeah, specifically what we found is that we're talking about women's heart health, how friendly versus hostile they were, the women themselves,
right,
was an important predictor, such that women who were less friendly and more hostile had more atherosclerosis, and
right,
that was especially true if their husband was also someone who made lots of hostile remarks during this disagreement.
Oh, I see.
Whereas for husbands, their own hostility and their wives' hostility in those remarks was not related to husband's atherosclerosis, but men who were very controlling during the conversation and men married to women who were very controlling during the conversation had higher levels of atherosclerosis.
Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability.
Disrespect welcomes to the show Tim Smith from the University of Utah, a psychology professor who's done a study by gender of stress and heart disease. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Your study takes an unusual slant on this. What slant does it take, and what motivated you to do the study this way?
Well, we were interested in following up some research that had previously demonstrated that couples' reports of marital stress or a history of separation and divorce was a risk factor for heart disease. We wanted to see if we could replicate or demonstrate that relationship again by looking at how the couple actually talks to each other.
So were these your studies that had drawn these indications before, or were they other doctors' studies?
There were other researchers in the field.
Right.
In this country and others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you constructed a very specific study.
Yeah, we wanted to see whether just rather than couples' kind of complaints, whether or not you could see this actually in their behavior. And sure enough, conversational styles during these disagreements were related to an early stage of the disease, atherosclerosis, before kind of clinically apparent coronary disease.
So for a listener, can you tell us how you measured these results?
Yeah.
In lay terms.
To start with the outcome, atherosclerosis, to keep people from having to go through some sort of invasive or potentially dangerous medical test, we used an increasingly common form of X-ray, a CT scan that picks up calcium deposits in the coronary arteries. And calcium is a component of sort of the middle or later stages of atherosclerosis. The so-called hardening of the arteries, the newer technology can actually take a picture of this that's no more dangerous than a regular X-ray. So we could bring couples who are outwardly healthy in and do this.
So calcium is a constituent part of atherosclerotic plaque, and you use this to identify the growth of plaque.
Yes.
Ah.
And now on the other end of it, what we did was bring couples in and give them sort of a top 10 list of the things that couples often disagree about: money, in-laws, kids, vacations, household duties. And for each couple, we picked the topic that they agreed that they mostly disagree about this, and then asked them to talk about it in front of the video cameras. And we used a coding system that's developed by my here at the University of Utah that measures fairly precisely two dimensions of this conversation, the level of warmth and friendliness versus coldness and hostility, sort of nice versus mean, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other dimension is how much control or dominance is expressed in their comments, from very controlling and heavy-handed down to sort of deferential or even submissive.
So that's an interesting grid that you set up there. So there is, theoretically, there's four conditions that you measured. Is nice controlling, mean controlling, a nice dominant, and mean dominant?
Yeah, right. All blends. Those describe what's called the interpersonal circumplex, which is a long-standing dimensional model of how social behavior is structured. That,
okay.
All of the things we say to each other vary along those two dimensions.
And you must have picked some unusually good-natured couples that can, you know, consent to this kind of a study.
Well, it's interesting. These couples needed to be old enough to have atherosclerosis, or at least many of them, and so they were in their early 60s,
oh.
Outwardly healthy. Nobody had had a prior diagnosis of cardiovascular disease that would have excluded them from the study. And they had been.
And you required them to have atherosclerosis so that you could measure the growth of it.
We took everybody who was willing to do this who was free of cardiovascular disease. So there were people in the sample who did not have any atherosclerosis, and then people who had lots of it.
So they didn't have to be old enough so that they had it at the start of the test. They had to be old enough that they could manifest it.
Correct. They had to be old enough that it was not rare in the population.
Right. Okay.
And they had been married on average about 25 years or so. These are relatively normal, seemingly happy and well-adjusted 60-year-olds, with the exception that they might be a little healthier outwardly than many 60-year-olds.
Okay. So where did you proceed from there?
So we sort of looked at this literature and took from it sort of a gendered hypothesis, if you will. There's literature to suggest that men and women pay attention to different aspects of their interpersonal worlds, their relationships, and are bothered by different things in their relationships.
Right.
Now, there's similarities and differences between men and women, and probably just as many differences among men as between men and women and all of that. So this is something of a generality, but tends to be true on average that women pay more attention to that warmth dimension, friendliness versus hostility, and are more bothered by it. In terms of the things that they describe as stressful, and men pay more attention to the control or dominance dimension and are more bothered by difficulties there.
Huh.
And so we basically went in to test this prediction that while marital strain, if you will, would be unhealthy for both men and women, the specific behavioral manifestations that might be unhealthy could differ for men and women, and that's indeed what we found.
Yeah. And since you expected to find it, you probably weren't surprised, but the rest of the world seemed surprised when the news broke.
Yeah. I think two things were surprising. One is that you could find something about this, you know, very slow-growing, progressive, but up until this point in their lives, silent disease on the basis of a conversation like that, because they happen every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was surprising. And then finding that the gender difference in what might be most important about those marital interactions, I think also was very interesting to people.
So if you're a man and you want to choose a partner for a healthy relationship, the criteria are a little different than if you're a woman and you want to choose a partner for a relationship that will help you stay healthy, aren't they?
Well, it's an interesting issue. You know, this idea, how much of this is choosing the partner versus a potentially modifiable just kind of habit of the way we talk to each other.
Yeah.
We had good measures of personality as well as these behavioral measures. And it is the case that those same two dimensions, how controlling people are and how unfriendly they are, when you measure them as personality characteristics, what are they like in general, those too were related to atherosclerosis. But these conversational habits, if you will, and the way the couple talks to each other were sort of an independent predictor. In other words, the statistical associations were separate from those involving personality.
Can you elaborate on that? Because it's a little bit of a headbender for me.
Yeah, it is. I guess the idea is that this relationship, obviously very important, it's the central relationship in these people's lives by and large,
yeah.
Is not, how they talk to each other is not just a manifestation of their personality, that it, in a way, has a character all its own,
oh.
And what that character of that relationship is like is probably related to how much sort of chronic stress versus soothing is available in it, and that's not surprisingly related to their heart risk.
Okay. Now, again, the difference for men and for women, chronic stress comes from different causes for the men and the women.
Yeah, specifically what we found is that we're talking about women's heart health, how friendly versus hostile they were, the women themselves,
all right.
An important predictor, such that women who were less friendly and more hostile had more atherosclerosis, and
right.
That was especially true if their husband was also someone who made lots of hostile remarks during this disagreement.
Oh, I see.
Whereas for husbands, their own hostility and their wives' hostility in those remarks was not related to husband's atherosclerosis, but men who were very controlling during the conversation and men married to women who were very controlling during the conversation had higher levels of atherosclerosis.
And now for a short break from our interview.
Can be. Well, I'm tramping and I'm stomping up and down this avenue. Well, I'm tramping and I'm stomping up and down this avenue. Well, I'm walking about my baby, when what are you gonna do? Well, I wait a long time, but I believe I'll give it up. Well, I wait a long time, but I believe I'll give it up. So if you don't want me, baby, I waited long enough.
You've been listening to Disrespect, talk with Dr. Tim Smith about heart disease as a measure of how men and women respond differently to emotions in relationships.
So in the case of the women, was it who initiated that caused the atherosclerosis, or was it simply a sort of presence created by the two of them, regardless where it started and where it ended?
The latter. Or just, this is the way that they talk to each other.
So she was hostile, or he was hostile, or they were both hostile. She was more at risk. And
correct.
For the men, if he was controlling, or she was controlling, or they were both controlling, he was more at risk.
Exactly.
I see. So we're looking for a friendly relationship where no one goes overboard, try to be controlling.
Right. If there are implications, the idea is to, I don't think there are ways to avoid disagreements being married for 25 years. It's just sort of part and parcel of the,
sure.
of the arrangement. But the question is, are there ways to talk to each other that don't engender chronic stress? And I think those would be disagreements where you can still remain warm and maybe address them without sort of the heavy-handed controlling.
So this is a natural gift or an acquired gift, either one, but worth having from the sound of it.
Yes.
All right. So did your study lead you to make any further conclusions? Are you going to carry on with the study into further studies of this behavioral discovery?
Yeah, we're doing a couple of different things. One, we want to bring everybody back and see if we can predict the progression of the disease, not just its current severity. It's a little stronger, more compelling scientific test of the hypothesis. And then we have the same sort of behavioral measures on couples who are younger, in their 40s, and we want to bring them back and measure earlier symptoms of atherosclerosis. Those folks don't have much calcification because it tends to occur a little later.
Right.
So we would bring them back and look at other signs of the early stages of the disease. And again, things we can do that aren't invasive. That would be ultrasound studies of the atherosclerosis in their carotid arteries, the arteries that bring blood to the head. So the carotid arteries, you can measure thickening of those artery walls, and that's not only associated with increased risk of stroke, but it's also associated with increased risk of atherosclerosis in the coronary arteries. If you have them in that site, you're likely to have them in the other.
So you're not just measuring calcium now, you're measuring anything that thickens the artery wall.
Right, exactly.
And that's in the younger patients?
That we would do that in everybody, but that would give us a chance to look at it in the younger couples, too.
Right.
And then we're also interested in trying to nail down what the mechanism is, what the psychobiological connection is between talking this way and atherosclerosis. We know a lot of things about what it's not. It's not the fact that people who have these conversational habits are heavier or more sedentary or have high cholesterol.
So you ruled all these things out at the start.
We ruled all these things out. But what we would like to do is look at some biological markers of chronic stress to see if, say, for example, chronic inflammatory conditions or things like that could be part of how you turn the corner, if you will, from a habit of the mind to the changes in the heart.
Well, you would have ruled out chronic inflammatory conditions too, would you not?
We didn't measure things. There's a couple of different ways that's done now, like a thing called C-reactive protein
yep.
Your internist might measure these days if you go in for a checkup. There is some literature to suggest that chronic stress elevates that, and
mm-hmm.
of course, chronic inflammation is part of the atherosclerosis, atherosclerotic process, and so that's one of the potential mechanisms. We
so
know
you,
that
you,
these
you,
people
you,
didn't have like chronic inflammatory diseases, but
right.
this would be sort of a lower than an illness threshold kind of elevation.
So you did a C-reactive protein blood test, or perhaps a sensitive C-reactive protein blood test, or you're going to do that on
right.
these.
Right, we have lots of samples stored, we're running out of money to thaw them and analyze them. So
good. When you release this study, You probably didn't expect the press that it got. Somebody picked up on it, and it hit all the papers. Were there any elaborations of the test, popular elaborations of the test, that either struck you as germane or as way off the mark?
It's funny. You get a lot of different things. Everything from very thoughtful conversations like the one we're having to things that I think are intended to be a little splashy or whatever. I've had people suggest that so what this is all about is that women are too controlling or something like that. That's not what I'd like to say about it.
So you got the full spectrum.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's interesting for couples who are health conscious. This boomer initiative, boomers who pay attention to their lifespan, and they take supplements for that reason, and they exercise for that reason. And I doubt that many of them have considered seriously modifying their behavior, other than their doctor's admonition to quote unquote avoid stress, which strikes me as kind of futile if you haven't defined it. It's interesting that you have defined it this way.
And it's also the case that even though stress at home is very common, a lot of people in reaction to the doctor's advice like that think about their jobs or money matters or the hassle of commuting in a crowded place or something like that.
And,
our data and some other work suggests that we should not neglect things closer to home.
Yeah, then in fact this is almost a foundation for measuring those other things, and that if you cut this down, everything else would probably, you haven't established that experimentally, but it seems to make common sense that if this kind of stress is addressed, then all the other stresses matter a little less because they're not loaded on top.
Yeah, I think that's true. I would agree with that, that close relationships, when they're going well, buffer us, in fact, against the adverse effects of lots of other sources of stress.
That's interesting, almost compensatory.
Yeah, right. So, or another way to think about it, when it's going badly at home, it's this sort of
additive,
double whammy, where it's you lose the protection against other sources of stress,
right,
and there's another one that could be problematic.
But what you're suggesting is that there's almost room for another study on how healthy relationships provide some resilience against stress. You know, in other words, you're not always starting from zero. You can start from below zero if you have support at home.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, and of course that's probably another study. It's been nice talking to you, and I value the insights that you've given us. Was there anything that you wanted to say in particular about the study, about the results, about the future that this gives us?
Well, a couple of quick things. One is I think it's always important to put in perspective, if people are ultimately interested in their heart health, they need to pay attention to all of the risk factors. This is interesting and novel, but quite frankly, if you were very sedentary or a smoker, and you also experience stress in your life, home or elsewhere, you shouldn't only focus on the stress. Those other behavioral changes are very important as well. So I always want to make sure people put it in context of the rest of the risk factors.
Right.
And then the other thing is just to encourage people not to wait until the stress at home gets very pointed. It's possible to change it. There are lots of data to suggest that even quite dysfunctional relationships can be improved with the help of very skilled counselors and therapists. But like a lot of preventive health behaviors, early in relationships or identifying habits that are maybe not quite feeling right, doing something about it sooner rather than later is always a good idea.
Because this progresses over time, and the effects of atherosclerosis are also additive, as like the effects of stress that create it. And the sooner you get at it, the sooner you stop the process or slow the process down. Well, I appreciate that again.
Okay.
Thanks, Tim, and we'll look forward to the results of the coming studies.
Very welcome, and thank you for your interest in our work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
You've been listening to Disrespect, talk with Dr. Tim Smith about heart disease as a measure of how men and women respond differently to emotions in relationships. In the middle of the show, Johnny Jones, I Believe I'll Give It Up, from the Rare Recordings CD. Coming up, Amos Milburn, Chicken Shack Boogie, from Jumpin' the Blues, Volume 1.
And I'm looking for that place they call the Chicken Shack. They say it's fine as wine and it's really on a ball. No windows, no doors, it's just a hole in the wall. Located down by the creek, where you can get a whole gob of good things to eat. All good parts of the chicken once more is a cinch. You can even get the last part that went over the fence. Yes, they say it's the place where all the bad cats meet. You better be mighty careful where you take a seat. Better be mighty careful, let's have a ball. Come on all you fellas and take a drink from my pack, 'cause the party's ready to start down at the Chicken Shack.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. To find out what we plan for the show, go to www.calendric.com/disrespect. That's CALENDRIC, www.calendric.com/disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.